Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Brains Bite Back podcast. I'm Jim Glade, your host. I want to take a second at the top of the show today to give a special shout out to former host and founder of the Brains Bite Back podcast, Sam Breakgia, who has moved on to more adventures. And of course, he meant the world to this podcast since its inception back in 2017. So a huge thank you to Sam for everything he's done for us, and also best of luck into the future. We're happy today to introduce our guest. He's a startup founder from Argentina, but has founded companies in numerous countries, including Mexico and the United States. His latest company, Foothold, is based in Miami, and it really struck me as something interesting. It's a model for crowdfunding investments in vacation rental properties, something pretty novel, and we'll get into that in a little while. But I'd love to welcome to the Brains Bite Back podcast, Foothold co-founder and CEO, Herman Romoldi. Herman, thanks for joining us. That's a pleasure, Herman. I know your entrepreneurial journey kind of stretches back over a decade now. And I know you grew up in Argentina as well. And I'm curious to know, how important is becoming an entrepreneur to an Argentinian, a young Argentinian, or maybe to yourself? Were you an outlier? Can you tell us a little bit about the entrepreneurship culture in Argentina?
I think entrepreneurs are usually the minority. If I have to compare Argentines and other entrepreneurs in the US, I think the concept of entrepreneurship is slightly more exotic. When I grew up, I don't remember having met other entrepreneurs, or even the concept of an entrepreneur. I think it's a concept that became rather popular by the late 90s. Uh-huh. So it wasn't in the culture. And I think in Argentina, South America in general, it's a new concept. And once you realize that you're an entrepreneur, you have a hard time trying to identify with other people or other stories, right?
And how'd you get into it if it wasn't necessarily, like, it's not like playing football, right? Not everybody's doing it. So how did you get into it?
I was working for a large company when I was 25, I'm 38 now. And I had this idea of getting people to rent their own car to their neighbors or other people and so forth. And so it was an idea for a startup. And I had some other people from my university had started companies before and started discussing this idea with them and so forth. And long story short, I ended up moving to Chile to launch this company in 2012, which was the first peer-to-peer car sharing company in South America. And I never stopped doing that after my first project.
That's really brilliant. I wanted to ask kind of where did the idea come from that as well? I know a lot of time in Latin America, there's a lot of success with startups that follow similar models to stuff that's launching in the United States. Rappi, for example, across South America, and some others. What was kind of the inspiration, the ideation behind launching the first peer-to-peer car sharing app in Latin America?
I think, in 2012, sharing was beginning to become a thing for startups. Airbnb was already popular. Uh-huh. And other people started thinking, how can we take the same concept and apply it to different industries? And so I was reasoning by analogy. I liked the idea of people sharing things. Okay. I thought it was like this. I like the values behind it. So I wanted to do something over, on those lines. That's my first version as an entrepreneur. I was trying to build a concept that was interesting and that was appealing to me. With time, I realized that doesn't need to be a priority. Sometimes as an entrepreneur, you can prioritize other things. But at that stage, having seen Airbnb and what was going on in the world, I thought it was something fun to work on. And I launched in 2012 in the US. There's two companies that launched that very same year. One is Getaround and the other one is Turo. Uh-huh. So in my case, it wasn't like I had a lot of experience ahead of me to copy the American model, like the American companies. Mm-hmm. So I was launching at the same time. I think we all got inspired by Airbnb. And some and that category in particular, which is car rental, works well when it comes to building a marketplace.
Gotcha. And can you tell us a little bit about the journey? Did you guys raise funding? What happened to the company? Can you tell us a little bit about the history there?
Absolutely. We fundraised in Chile. I think we fundraised around $500,000. It wasn't a large amount as you would get in the US with comparable companies. We had a lot of traction. We have up to over 1,000 cars on the platform.
Wow.
We try to differentiate with lower prices and convenience because cars were located nearby. But there's one thing I didn't see coming, which was that the car rental in South America is prone to fraud. And we would get a lot of car thefts that weren't real. So for example, I'll give you an example to illustrate this. Uh-huh. Say you rent a car and you call up the car rental company, you say, hey, the car just disappeared. Uh-huh. I don't know where it is. Uh-huh. And as a car rental company, there's little you can do. So we would get like this people that would rent cars and report that the car went missing repeatedly. So last year, I think we have 8 cases of car theft.
Oh, wow.
And amazing as it sounds, one of our main partners was an insurance company with whom we built a custom-made insurance policy so people can rent their car and so forth. And I remember going to one of the last meetings with them and saying, like, I guess we don't have a solution for this. We already put like GPS systems in the car and so forth. And we kept having this fraudulent car theft. And our insurance partners weren't making any money because
they're paying out a bunch of money for the stolen cars or supposedly stolen.
Absolutely. So profit was evaporating. And so that's interesting. You can follow a model that is working in the US, or you can try to develop a trend like sharing and building a marketplace. But still in a different country, the concept might not work at all. And it was our case. We had to close, like, we had a lot of growth, but we couldn't be profitable because of that. So we had to close the company within a couple of days when you have the last car theft. So as for me as an entrepreneur, the path in that, you can say it was traumatic because I worked for several years building this company and we couldn't make the concept work in Latam. But on the bright side, it took me to my next startup because I was an accountant originally when I started with this. And through all of the process, I became like a real good software developer. Yeah. When I was building that company, because my role was Slido, the CTO. So my next startup was purely software. I realized I was so scared of building something like to fraud that I just like, this is what I'll do the rest of my life. I just code and build software. And that's my second company, which is it's a software as a service, which is Amalibre.
Uh-huh.
So it's a product for retail merchants that sell through Amazon and Mercado Libre, which is the Latin version of Amazon. And it's been moderately successful, has a lot of paying customers, and that's what was my second venture. And with the proceeds of that company, I decided to start investing in real estate. So in 2018, I realized that real estate in Argentina was at historically low prices. There were some problems with financing, and you can find apartments where the cost of acquisition was below the cost of construction that happened in Buenos Aires. So you can buy, for example, in 2018, you could buy a studio apartment, 500 square feet for $60,000. And the cost of construction was 30% more of that. So,
and Herman, let me slow you down here. For an American audience that might not have a grip on the current financial situation in Argentina or how it was at that time, I assume this is maybe back 5-6 years or when we're talking about when you started investing in these properties. Can you just give us a you know, a brief background of the current economic situation, et cetera, for those that might not be aware.
Absolutely. So it's really hard for real estate to be mispriced. It takes financing to be shut off, as it happened in the US in 2008, for example, for you to find real estate properties that are below their construction cost. Whenever you find that, I think a real estate investor should become greedy and try to buy as many as he can, right? The explanation for this is that in Argentina in 2018, because of inflation, real estate mortgages were no longer available. So the public that will usually buy an apartment going to the bank and so forth, they could no longer do it. So there was less demand. Only people that had all the cash up front could buy an apartment. So when that happens, supply and demand tend to adjust and prices will go down. So what you can see in 2018 is that prices dropped 30% because there was less, because the bank wouldn't lend you money and there was less people just buying apartments. And in some cases, not in every case, when financing is shut off, some properties might be at bargain prices. And I started researching the market and I found out that some properties brand new or almost brand new were at fairly good prices, and the cash flow that they could generate on short as a short-term rental on Airbnb and so forth would give me an 8% return, an 8% return and so forth. And the appreciation that I would expect for when financing would come back on, for example, in 3 years or 4 years, would be again 30% the same going up. And so that was a hypothesis. That's what I bought, like the first property and so forth. Uh-huh. But it's through the process that I learned that although that contrarian approach is exciting and it's correct, if you want to optimize for cash flow, there are other strategies that are more interesting. So what, as a real estate investor, you usually optimize two different functions. One is cash flow, for example, rental income, uh-huh. and the other is appreciation, right? Uh-huh. So you may have one hypothesis of appreciation, which is a market with no financing presents an opportunity. That was my hypothesis, but I didn't have a hypothesis for cash flow because I would just buy a normal apartment and put it on Airbnb. So it took me like a year or 2 years to come up with an insight that would make a difference on the cash flow side, which was that on Airbnb, on short-term rentals, it's only the properties that are uniquely designed or have unique architecture. It's only those properties have the ability of getting users to stop scrolling, to enter the listing and to make a reservation. Oof, so right. You would see that the property, for example, you buy a cabin that's elevated. It costs the same as a standard cabin, but the rental income will be higher. And when I was researching the market, I've noticed that the price was significantly higher. So it was the same asset, but the price for the rental was 50% more. Uh-huh. And then I thought, there might be something here. I mean, I reached to that insight, but I didn't know what to do next, uh-huh. right? But I knew there was something there. And through the path, then I would start working on the new crowdfunding platform, which is what I'm working on right now, which is foothold.co, which allowed anyone to invest in unique stays or luxury unique stays.
I want to get to Foothold, and I think there's a lot there for an American audience as well. I know you guys will be expanding into the U.S. I think in the next year. But before we do that, I wanted to. So, you set the scene for Argentina and investors that might be interested in property acquisition in Latin America. Of course. Argentina this weekend is heading towards an election, a big election. I think as well, the mayoral elections in Buenos Aires, obviously one of the most popular places for apartment rentals and Airbnbs, et cetera, and a big a big issue as well are these Airbnb rental properties, new potential regulations, etc. Are you seeing any changes to this, anything that could change the current situation in which you described kind of on the horizon?
I think for anyone investing in short-term rentals, regulations are a big risk.
Right.
And when you compare long-term rentals to short-term rentals, in average, are since 2021, short-term rentals have the ability of generating almost 50% more rental income than long-term rentals. So,
wow,
that doesn't seem like that seems too good to be true until you realize that some cities are working hard to eradicate short-term rentals. Mm-hmm. And I think that is the main risk for any short-term rental investor. What happens in their municipality or in their city? Since we're selling for when you're building a crowdfunding platform, the risk is so high you need to try to avoid it at all costs. Mm-hmm. So the first 24 units that we're selling we're showing securities for on our platform are condo units from hotels. So by doing that, you reduce the risk of the changing regulations, because if you purchase a property that's already has a permit as a hotel to operate as a hotel, uh-huh, you're not to short-term rental regulations.
Gotcha.
You're a business support. And there's a subcategory which I particularly like, which is condominium hotels,
uh-huh,
which is, it's a figure on which you can buy, for example, a unit within a hotel, but you have ownership over that unit. You can sell it on the market and so forth, but it's managed as a hotel. It's part of the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's this, like, that's our sweet spot. That's the asset class that we're looking for.
Very, very,
very interesting.
No,
right?
Very interesting for sure. I mean, of course we saw the news, with what was happening in New York, as well with regulation against, Airbnb properties there, etc. So it's awesome that you guys have found kind of a market in the condominiums and in the hotel space where you're kind of walled off from that risk, it sounds like, as well.
Yep.
So I'd love to hear about Foothold. Really, for those that don't know, it's a cool idea. It's crowdfunding vacation rental property development, and actually really lowering the barrier for everyday people to invest in properties. If I'm not mistaken, I read that it was about as little as $200 to start investing in portions of properties. But maybe can you tell me just a little bit about how it works for an ordinary investor to get on the platform and start investing?
Yes, we are fully SEC compliant. Uh-huh. And what compliance says is that details of each of our properties can only be displayed on our websites. So we cannot advertise publicly about specific details of any offering.
Mm-hmm.
But we can discuss about Foothold as a platform.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when you mentioned the $200 minimum investment and so forth, you're talking about the product market fit or what problem we're solving.
Mm-hmm.
When I started looking for my first property to invest in, I realized that real estate takes time, expertise, and usually large sums of money. So like those three things, and you may find yourself working almost full time if you want to find like the right property to invest in. And that it's because of that fractional investment as a niche is experiencing high adoption. I think professionals that have the ability to save money month to month, they want to invest part of their savings in real estate.
Okay.
And crowdfunding or fractional investing is one of the best options, available options. And that's why we're seeing this very high adoptions for the past 2 years.
Perfect. And so can you tell me a little bit about the experience of the platform? So if I'm going in and I'm interested in browsing, what's kind of the user experience? How would I go in and get started?
Yes, we're focused on our hypothesis is about using design and architecture, right? We have this strong belief that cash flow can be optimized.
And for those that that haven't checked it out, foothold.co, and there's some beautiful, really beautiful properties on there as well. It looks like just in the forest, glass all around. You know, just imagine yourself waking up here. So really beautiful properties, by the way.
That is, yes, that is a focus. Beautiful properties that can for vacation rentals. And so the process on Foothold is you would, an accredited or non-accredited investor would go online, register and invest in a few minutes by selecting properties that they find attractive. So as of today, we're selling securities of 20, we will be releasing different properties, but now it's like 21 units that are being developed in Patagonia in Argentina.
Uh-huh.
And with that hypothesis, which is focusing on design and unique architecture. And how do you make all of this work, right? Because as I mentioned, I told you the story about me looking for properties to invest in and finding only a few properties with good cash flow. And what we found out through the process for the past 2 years is if you want to invest in a unique hotel or a unique vacation rental, you need to partner with a real estate developer.
Yeah.
And there is, and you would support the real estate developer on their vision for a place, and you will support them by fundraising and, you know, making available funds for them to build their vision.
Uh-huh.
It takes, but the right way, or the only way that I found to build a platform that can invest on unique stays is by partnering with developers, because it's really hard to find unique properties for sale.
Gotcha.
So the way we're bringing this vision into life with this first 21 units is by partnering with a large real estate developer, helping them develop the vision for this particular place. And after that has been done, the vision has been created to invite retail investors to join, and be a part of this project. So On the user side, it seems seamless. You go in, you're investing in a few minutes. But on the supply side, it takes at least 18 months to find the right project, partner with the right developer, come up with a vision. So we need to be doing simultaneously. So for example, this units that we're issuing securities for right now will be probably sold in the next 6 months.
Uh-huh.
But we need to plan ahead of that, right? So we're now working on a similar concept in Puerto Rico in the island of Vieques, which has one of the best fundamentals we have ever seen.
Wow.
Wow.
How many developers are you working with now?
Right now, this particular project is two different developers.
Okay. One based in Puerto Rico and one in Argentina and Patagonia.
That is correct. Yes. But part of scaling this company will be to have a funnel that includes more developers. What we find out is that the process takes so long that we need to build relationships with multiple developers if we want to have a good funnel and pipeline.
Tell me about some of those challenges. Obviously, when you're talking about the B2B space and working with large companies, whether it be, you know, a large tech firm or a large construction development company, obviously those sales processes take far longer. Tell us about your guys' approach. What have you learned along the way? Any mistakes that you've made as well?
I think it's really hard to go to a well-known real estate developer and convince them to build, for example, a unique hotel.
Uh-huh.
What we approached the problem differently. We did the research. We identified the market ourselves. So we know that fundamentals were good. We researched all of Argentina. There were two markets that we were excited about. Patagonia is one of them.
Of course.
We then work for 6 months to find the right plot of land. So you need to find a plot of land that has unique characteristics. Either it's overviewing the lake, or we focus on lake views because we believe that.
Who doesn't like a lake view?
Right. But it's interesting, because now you need to find a plot of land that has the right zoning for building a hotel that's also overseeing the lake. So that makes it like there's a you add complexity to the search. So we knew precisely with which architects and developers we wanted to work, mm-hmm. and we knew which market. We had to find the right part of that. So we took us 6 months. We finally did so. And once we had that, and we bought the land, we went to the developer and said, this is what we have, right? Mm-hmm. We have Dharma. We believe there's a high potential for building this particular product here. Why don't we go deep into, why don't we research it together?
Mm-hmm.
So we took that, we took a contrarian approach. We did all the homework ourselves. And we only went on to convince the developer once all the work had been done. Because otherwise, as we grow and our brand becomes well known, real estates that already have this vision in mind will reach out and say, hey, can you help us fundraise?
Right.
But as of today, we don't know which developers are actually trying to develop something like this, mm-hmm. a unique step. So,
and it was that process that you used in Patagonia, was that replicated in Puerto Rico as well? Or was it easier because you had already gotten started in Patagonia and you could kind of show them, hey, this is what we've done so far. Was anything changed or was it the same process?
It makes a difference when people see the what you would see on our website and they get a grasp, they grasp what beautiful architecture is. It helps and developers get excited. But in Puerto Rico, we did it the same way. We researched all of Puerto Rico. We like Puerto Rico because it's still part of the U.S. And it has a tax credit. So if you're a real estate developer, you get 90% of your tax income back.
Wow.
Which is amazing. Uh-huh. We thought that market combines high volumes of tourism and amazing tax incentives. So having that in mind, we decided to research Puerto Rico, and we found one location that has like the best fundamentals we have ever seen, which are the small island of Vieques, which is on the east side of the island. It's a beautiful place. You have bioluminescence, bioluminescent bays, the best beaches in all of Puerto Rico. It's a very special place, and it's hard to build there because it's sort of isolated. Mm-hmm. So there's limited supply. So we found, we identified a market and we opened a conversation with one developer who has a particular method of constructing that they pre-build the units and then they ship part of them. So it's compatible with Vieques, mm-hmm. with that island in particular.
Mm-hmm.
So we reach out to that. We reach out to them and say, this is the vision that we have. This is what we want to build. We've seen what you've been building so far. I think be compatible. They hadn't researched the market, so they were pursuing different ideas. They were saying, like, no, but we like to develop the neighborhoods or that. No, guys, look at these numbers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a few months to start building an empathic relationship. So that is part, I think that is also part of the role of a real estate developer or a platform, to invest time in building trustworthy relationships with potential partners, and that's what we're going through right now with them.
Awesome. Well, congrats first of all for the entry into the U.S. Via Puerto Rico. Do you have any other places in mind? Have you been scouting other places in the U.S. for? I'm from Colorado, which I would say is a beautiful spot. So I'm just curious. Have you been looking at any other areas that might work for development?
Yes, we've been researching Colorado. Actually, we like Estes Park.
Oh yeah, yeah. My aunt lived there. Very cool.
Yeah, lives there.
Yes, beautiful.
It's beautiful. Development there, the zoning requirements are a bit tough. But so Estes has like a limited supply. But
mm-hmm.
with regards to the US, we like Colorado, but in particular the fundamentals are good in Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
We like Orlando and Atlanta, those two markets. So I think I think our next development project is not, we haven't started building relationships with any developers on those cities.
Uh-huh.
I mean, intuition tells me it's going to be either Colorado, Orlando, or Atlanta.
Awesome. Well, I'll keep an eye out. And either of those places, honestly, I would love to visit anyway. But if there is something in Colorado, definitely keep my eye out for that. But before we wrap up, too, I wanted to talk a little bit because kind of the crowdfunding and the investment in properties and kind of chopping this up is not a completely new concept. And there's a couple other competitors as well. And I'd like to just kind of hear from you what you feel like differentiates yourself. Is it the geographic location? Is it the ease of going onto the platform and investing? Here.co, I think is one. Can you tell us just a little bit about what differentiates you, sets you guys apart?
Yes, most of the crowdfunding platforms out there serve accredited investors. So the minimum investment for accredited investors usually is higher, over $5,000. Uh-huh. In the past 2 years, there has been fractional investment that's a trend, and there's companies offering non-accredited investors to start investing with $100 or $200. Uh-huh. So that's why this new batch of crowdfunding companies are different from the old incumbents because of that. Uh-huh. So that in the one hand makes us different on a market that it's highly popular. There's a lot of supply. But how we try to differentiate is we have a strong hypothesis on how to approach vacation rentals through architecture and design. And we only invest in properties that have this potential of scroll stopping for Airbnb users.
Right.
And we believe that for long-term returns, that is the right approach. Yeah. And so the asset class that we are particularly focused on, as opposed to the company that you mentioned or another competitor, Misarect, is that we focus on glamping sites, unique stays, and design hotels. So that's the asset class that we understand and we're focusing on.
And tell me a little bit about what the return looks like for an investor. So if I go on and I invest $1,500 or $2,000 into a property in Patagonia, you guys develop it and it starts working on Airbnb. What is my monthly dividend? What comes back to me? What does it look like?
Yes, the SEC, the part of the norm that makes us compliant with the SEC regulations, states that any financial projections or market research information has to be displayed on the website. Mm-hmm. And cannot advertise, because what the SEC states is you cannot solicit for capital on media. So the answer to that question is returns are not to be displayed on any podcast.
Okay, understood. I wasn't trying to rope you into any problems with the SEC, I promise.
Well, we've been working with them for a year and a half, so the guidelines are pretty clear. The answer to a question like that is that all of the information is displayed on the website, so people or any interested party can go into foodcall.co and research a property and to try to understand returns and so forth.
Gotcha. And can you tell us maybe broadly a little bit about what the benefits would be for developers? Why would crowdfunding be the way to go versus regular institutional investors?
I think that's a great question. I think there's where the opportunity lies in. Mm. So if you're a developer as a real estate investor, say that we decide to go and buy a shopping mall or a house, we would go to the bank and we would probably leverage that property. And that is not true when you're buying land or when you have a construction product. Uh-huh. Project. And so if we have this idea for a glamping site and we go to the bank because we need money to buy a plot of land and build a number of units, the answer would be usually no. There's no such thing as mortgages for land. And there is, you can take on debt for construction, but the interest rate is pretty high. Uh-huh. Commercial loan. So as a real estate investor, first stage of a project is usually, it's really hard to find financing for.
The most expensive, hard to find financing.
Yes.
Okay.
For land, you can forget it. And for construction, you would pay, depends, it depends, but you can pay up to 20% per year in interest rate.
Wow.
So as a developer, I think the right approach is to use crowdfunding to build the first number of units, validate the concept. And once you have a condo hotel or you have a glamping site that is already has revenue, then you go to the bank and you say, this is what I have built. I need such and such. I have these capital requirements to build more units. And in that case, you will get, in that case, you can find financing, but not before that. So I think crowdfunding and the opportunity for real estate developers is that capital is not available at a seed stage for any of these developments. This is one way to bridge that. You can use crowdfunding, you can use money from friends and family and so forth, but this, I think crowdfunding is one of the ways to approach
Very cool. Bring them to a proof of concept that they can take to larger investors and banks to get more capital and scale.
That is correct. That is correct. That's the opportunity we're seeing.
Beautiful, Herman. Well, congratulations on everything you've built. It's really cool. This foothold.co. I wanted to ask if there's anything else you wanted to mention that we might not have touched on.
Just visit foothold.co and get in touch with us if you have any questions.
All right. Thank you very much. Herman Romoldi is the CEO and co-founder of Foothold. You can see it at foothold.co. Thank you so much, Herman, for being with us on the Brains Bite Back podcast.
Thank you, Jim.
All right. Take care.